desire for connection, the desire for relationship. It makes it possible for us to connect with people in a way that if we didn't have the desire, we'd just sit at home alone, right? Desire, it's a good thing. Except desire is one of those things that is insatiable. You can't ever turn off desire. Ecclesiastes 1:8 says, "The eye is not satisfied with seeing, and the ear is not satisfied with hearing." John Mark Comer asks a question, "What would it take for you to feel satisfied?" And the answer, if you really think about it, is everything. If we could experience every experience and connect with every person and have everything everywhere, well, in that case, we might be satisfied. And of course, that's impossible. We have limits on our time, we have limits on our money, and so all of our desire ends up, well, it ends up being poured out in not quite complete ways. A guy named Carl Rayner points this out. "In the torment of the insufficiency of everything attainable, we learn that ultimately in this world there is no finished symphony. Everything seems to simply continue on. We eat, and a little while later, we want to eat again." And we just keep that desire moving. We have chronically unsatisfied desires. We're restless, in a way, as humans. You might say, well, this desire is satisfied, but it's only satisfied for now. And I think the reason is that God designed us. He designed us for infinite life with him. And there's nothing, even if we had all the desires fulfilled, we had all the money and all the time to experience everything and everybody, we would still be missing something because God designed us for connection with him. And nothing but that connection with God can truly satisfy us. How much of your life is led on by and pushed by desire? Your desire to experience pleasure and satisfaction, or your desire to be loved, or your desire to possess, your desire to experience luxurious rest. The rest industry has grown in a huge way since COVID. In 2019, the cost was $150 billion less than it is today. In 2023, the sleep industry was $585 billion. Pillows and mattresses and sleep aids and all of the other things. $585 billion. In the most recent 10 years, in the United States alone, the insomnia market dealing with sleep aids has grown by 4.5 times. The desire for rest. It's deep inside us. Every one of us knows when you haven't slept for a while, life is not good. When our innate restlessness collides with the digital age, where advertisers are always pushing notifications on us, you know, whether it's in your purse or your pocket or your screen or on your computer, whatever it is, advertisers are constantly pushing into our lives, interrupting us, challenging us, right? And that doesn't even include the entertainment that we pursue, whether for good reasons or just because it's the next thing in the scrolling list. And it seems like for 18 hours a day, we have a constant input into our minds. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, 31% of adults reported symptoms of anxiety and or depression in their October 2021 study. 31% of adults. Businesses and schools are continually and increasingly recognizing the need for mental health professionals right there in their context, not somebody out there that they can refer to, but somebody that works in the business or is in the school, because anxiety and depression is such a big deal in our society today. Over the last 15 years, we've seen a spike in the incidences of anxiety and depression, especially among young adults, youth, and children. Nearly 7% of adults, 15% of young adults reported anxiety in 2018. 7% of adults, but of just the young adult category, 15%. But that's 2018. In 2023, the Census Bureau's Household Pulse Survey found that among adults 18 to 24, that's the young adult category, 50% reported anxiety or depression. That's a huge increase in just 5 years? between Netflix and Instagram and TikTok and news apps and YouTube and Amazon shopping and so many other potential experiences in our digital world, more and more people are spending their time with their face in a device and less time socially and physically renewing their lives. And this is our current age, always on, always connected, always doing, always entertaining, always listening or watching or something. Something is always happening. And when our brains and our bodies and our relationships don't have time to rest, what happens to our minds and our bodies? What happens to those relationships? We need time and we need space to simply exist, to exist in a holistic and renewing space. If we're honest with ourselves, though, we have to admit that this isn't just a modern problem. This is a problem that's been around for, well, as long as there's been people. Go back a few hundred years to when we didn't have the digital age, and you'll find that people were waking up really early to milk the cow. They'd stay up late, getting in the firewood or doing whatever was necessary. And sometimes we have these nostalgic ideas of the simple life, but I lived in Bonner's Ferry for a little while, and I know people who live something like that, and it is a lot of work, and they're physically tired. And they're socially disconnected because their work requires so much of them, they don't have time to be with their families. And in that context, people needed rest. And this isn't a new thing for even people a few hundred years ago. This is a need that God designed into the fabric of our being. Even before we had the necessary work to provide for our families, even before there was brokenness and sin in our world, God knew that our bodies and our minds and our relationships needed rest. And so he programmed it into the DNA of our world, into the rhythm of our lives. In the Genesis account of creation, we find that the world that God created took 6 days to make. Everything happened in 6 days. And we know this is a literal 6 days because it follows a pattern. He says the evening and the morning were the first day. The evening and the morning were the second day. And these are things that we experience today, right? We walk through our life, and in our day we have an evening. It starts with dark, according to the text in Genesis. And then we have the daylight time, right? And then another evening, and then another daylight time, and then another evening, and another daylight time. And that's just how our day goes. And I think God used this and in the creation account to show us that this model was something that our life should look like. And so 6 days God creates. Now if you do a search in Google about the origin of the seven-day week, you'll find some interesting stuff. Most people say that it began with the Babylonians. The Babylonians had the seven-day cycle and the calendar and all this stuff, and then it wasn't until the Romans, they spread it all around the world, that it became a worldwide thing. You had 8-day weeks and 10-day weeks and all these other different versions of the week in different cultures and religions. But cultures long before the Babylonians were observing a seven-day cycle. In Britannica, Encyclopedia Britannica, they say, when you look up the word week, they say it's a period of 7 days, a unit of time artificially devised with no astronomical basis. Well, if it's not from astronomy, the month and the year are astronomical, how do we get it? They say the week's origin is generally associated with the ancient Jews and the biblical account of the creation, according to which God labored for 6 days and rested on the seventh. Evidence indicates, they say, however, that the Jews may have borrowed the idea of the week from Mesopotamia, for the Sumerians and the Babylonians divided the year into weeks of 7 days each, one of which they designated as a day of recreation. I think that's fun. Even in a secular source, they have to recognize the biblical origin. They go away from it as quickly as they can, but the Bible says that God started this seven-day cycle. There's no other rational reason for it. Even back into the farthest reaches of recorded history, we find that people were keeping a seven-day cycle with 6 days of work and a day of rest. After the sixth day of creation, the Bible says it this way in Genesis 2, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. And so God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. God rested, but not because he needed rest. He rested because he designed it as a cycle of work and rest for us. He designed it as a gift. Many years later, before the Ten Commandments were ever given, God was walking the people of Israel through this experience, coming from Egypt to Canaan. And along that process, they needed food. And so he promised them that he would give bread from heaven and provide this food for them in the wilderness. And what he did is he said that they should gather manna in the morning, just enough for that day, breakfast, lunch, and supper. If they gathered too much, it would spoil the next day. It wouldn't work to save it up. So every single day, they had to rely on the fact that God would give them what they needed. But on the sixth day, they were supposed to get twice as much and not gather on the seventh day. They were supposed to rest on this seventh day. Just enough for the day. That's an interesting thought. Jesus echoes this in Matthew 6, and he says, "Therefore, don't be anxious about tomorrow. Let tomorrow be anxious about itself, because there's plenty of trouble in today." And I think there's something about this need for us to trust today. Today is God's day. Today is the day he's provided. I trust in God day by day. Exodus 16, God says to Moses, "Behold, I'm about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not." And then a few verses later, he says, "6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is a Sabbath, there will be none." God provided just enough for the 6 days, but on the sixth day, he provided enough for the seventh. And I think there's something here. When we look at the idea of Sabbath, we have to remember that God is saying, "I'm going to give you in 6 days what you need for 7 days." He says he's going to provide enough for us so that we can stop and rest. When God gave them the Ten Commandments just a little while later, in Exodus chapter 20, he includes this command: "Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." Notice a few things about this command. First of all, it takes you back to creation. He says, remember, this is a reminder, something that we're supposed to look back on. The pattern that he created at the beginning is something that's valuable for us today. Secondly, it tells us that God, he's designed work for our good. 6 days you shall work, he says. It's a good thing. We shouldn't be lazy. God hasn't invited us to laziness. But those 6 days, he says, work for those 6 days. And then the third is that the Sabbath is directional. On the seventh day, he says, it is a Sabbath to the Lord. It's a directional rest, not just any old rest, not the rest of laziness, but the rest of trust and worship to the Lord. Number four, you can't be selfish with rest. Rest is something that God has invited us to give away to others. You can't rest while your children work. That's not allowed here. You can't rest while your employees or your slaves or your anything, anybody that works for you, you have to let them rest too. Even if they're from a different nationality, even if they've got a different culture, a different religion, you need to give them rest too. And in fact, not even just the people in your life, you need to rest your animals too. Give rest away. It's not a selfish thing. And then fifth, there's a blessing that awaits us when we surrender to the trusting, worshipful Sabbath rest God has designed. Now, I know we could get into an interesting discussion about legalism when we talk about the Sabbath and all those laws the Pharisees made to surround the Sabbath and protect it and keep it sanctified or whatever. It would be easy for us to dive into that particular subject. And the Christian church today has largely abandoned a cycle of 6 days of work and 1 day of rest. They say the reason is because Jesus, he fulfilled the law and it no longer applies. And Jesus' sacrifice on the cross does everything. And so we don't have to keep any of those feasts or holy days or Sabbaths or anything, even the weekly Sabbath that the Jews had back in the day. And the next step is not to replace Sabbath rest with anything. It's simply to say, well, you can just stay connected 7 days a week, work 7 days a week, have responsibilities 7 days a week, and just come to church for a couple hours once a week, and maybe join a small group during the week, and you're going to be good. But the reality is we're not good. More and more Christians are finding that the Bible has invited us to rest. There remains, therefore, a Sabbath rest for the people of God, Hebrews 4:9 says. There is still a rest for God's people, is what that's saying. Now, the Barna Group, they did a study of pastors, and they found that we break the cycle of rest too often. You know, it's sermon prep and visiting people and administrative stuff and all the things that pastors do during the week. And then on the weekends, we still preach and do member ministry on that seventh day too. And we can be that always on, even in spiritual things. And they say, according to the Barna Group, that without a pattern of rest, pastors burn out. They say pastors need a 24-hour period without work to renew their mind and their body and the relational center of a person, allowing them to be more present during and more productive during the other 6 days. Now, obviously pastors need that, and so does everybody else. In 2005, National Geographic published the findings of a scientific research that they explored. It's called the U.S. National Institute on Aging. They traveled around the globe and they learned about the longest living people in the world. And most of these groups were subsets of a culture, right? They were a 2,500 member town in Sardinia and a bunch of centenarians that lived there. Or they were a group from Okinawa, Japan, and lots of people that lived past 100 lived there. But they studied another group. And it was the Seventh-day Adventists in Loma Linda, California, and they stretched that since then beyond that space, and they found that the centenarians in that context were a little different than all the others. These others are generally, they're connected by their genes, and they're connected by location, and they're connected closely by lifestyle. And some of those things were true of the Seventh-day Adventists, but they were not nearly as homogenous of a group. They were from all different cultures, all different walks of life. They didn't all eat the same, you know, algae from the Japanese ocean there, you know. They didn't have the same stuff that everybody else had, but what they did have was rest. These were a group of people that had a regular cycle of spiritual rest, 1 day in seven. Another study found that the average Adventist lived 4 to 10 years longer than the average Californian, and they credited this mostly to the time that they spent resting. Recent evangelical pastors have used these studies, and they've said, God has given us a pattern of rest, and when we keep that pattern, he gives it back to us. See, 10 years, if you take and live for, you know, 70 or so years, and you rest 1 day in seven, well, that's about 10 years of your life. And it's as though God is saying, here, you've given me that time, you've trusted me with that, I'll give it back to you. Jesus said it well. Mark chapter 2, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was created, it was designed, it was planned as a gift for humanity. It was a blessing that God gave us from the dawn of creation. In the Ten Commandments, God said, remember the Sabbath of creation. It reminds us where we came from. And I would argue that if we understood the Sabbath and followed it, we wouldn't be struggling with all the interesting identity crises that we have today, because we would know that we were designed by the Creator God with purpose. and for loving relationship and intimacy with him. In Deuteronomy, Moses pointed out that God gave us the Sabbath to remind us that he saved the people of Israel from Egypt. Now, you might not be in Egypt and need saving from Egypt, but we all need saving, don't we? Maybe the type A personalities among us who like to control every facet of their lives would not like to think about this. But the reality is, we can't control every aspect of our lives. Do everything that you can to order your life, and you're still going to find that you can't control the outcomes of your children as they grow older. Right? They get to make some of those choices themselves. You can't control your own body, right? You can't make it healthy. I mean, you can do some good things to make it healthy, but ultimately, your health isn't in your hands. And when we live a life that we can't control, what do we do? Right? How do we handle this? I think God has said that he would give us deliverance. He would be the healer of our bodies. He would be the one that would solve these problems that are outside of our control. And the idea of Sabbath is the idea of resting in God's salvation. In Ezekiel 20, God points to the transformative work that the Bible calls sanctification. And he says this, "Moreover, I gave them my Sabbaths as a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them." The Sabbath is a sign that God created us, a remembrance that he created us, a remembrance that he saves us, and a remembrance that he is the one who does the maturing and growing work in our lives. Rest in God. He created you. He saves you. He'll grow you. Sabbath rest is a physical manifestation of the spiritual reality that Ephesians 2:8 describes when it says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing. It is the gift of God, not a result of works, so that no one may boast." The act of rest is the act of trusting God. God designed this pattern of 6 days where you and I work. In that 6 days, we take ownership of the results of our lives, the successes, the triumphs. We provide for our families. We make sure that everything is good at home. We create, we design, we decorate, we build, all the stuff that work entails. But then God calls us to stop. And that's really the meaning of Sabbath, to cease, to stop. He says, stop and rest. We rest our drive to provide, and we trust that he will give us all that we need in those 6 days of work. Proverbs says it this way, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your paths straight," one translation puts it. "He will direct your paths," another one puts it. Trust in the Lord. This is the meaning of Sabbath. Just a couple suggestions about the 24-hour period of rest, that one day in seven. First of all, stop your regular work. Turn off all the business stuff. The thoughts about the next deal, the phone calls, all of the stuff. Just put it away. Secondly, turn off the TV and the gaming console and unplug from entertainment. Take that stimulation that's constantly there, the dopamine rush that we keep getting every time we chase something down in social media, just put that to the side. Let your brain rest and recuperate. And in the moments that we turn that off, I think we're reminding ourselves about what Isaiah says. It's in returning and rest that you will be saved. In quietness and trust shall be your strength. I think another idea that we need to keep in mind on this Sabbath, this rest, is that we should keep life simple and rejuvenating and worshipful. Instead of making a huge, complicated meal where you have to stay all day in the kitchen and slave away at the stove, keep it simple. Eat good food, don't get me wrong, but make it simple so it doesn't take a lot of effort. Take time in your day to actually rest. Go to bed early, wake up late, take a nap. Actually let your body rest. Also, you could spend time with people that matter a lot in your life, your family, your closest friends. Invest in those relationships. You can spend time with your kids. You can cuddle with your spouse. You can play with each other, laugh with each other, talk with each other, eat yummy food with each other, right? Enjoy those relationships. Invest in those relationships. Also, spend time with God in nature. He created the world. He gave you a day to rest. Might as well enjoy what he created for you to enjoy. Also, spend time with God's people. Exodus 23 tells us that God gave us a Sabbath as a holy convocation, a holy getting together. Get together and spend time with God's people, worshiping and singing and eating and serving. Which brings me to my last point. God designed us with a day of rest, not to ignore the needs in our world, but to give us time to pay attention, sympathize, and minister. God says, serve. In Isaiah 58, he says it this way: isn't this the fast, the spiritual, religious thing that I've called you to? Isn't this the fast that I chose? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. These are things that we can, of course, do any day of the week, but in freeing people from oppression and providing clothes for people who need the warmth and feeding the person that's hungry and all the things that Isaiah 58 describes, when we do that, we clear the way for others to rest. Because how can you rest when you're cold and hungry, right? Sometimes we need to give something to somebody else so that they can experience the rest that God has given them as a gift. Now, because the Bible account of creation describes a day as first the evening and then the daytime, the tradition has been to follow that pattern for Sabbath. So on Friday evening when the sun goes down, that would be the beginning of Sabbath. And then on Saturday evening when the sun goes down, that would be the end of Sabbath. And during that period of time, well, there's a transition that our bodies and our minds need to make. And I just want to invite John Brunt and Alberto Valenzuela to come forward and hang out with me just for a couple minutes. Could you grab that mic there? And I'll have another one here. There's a transition that we make, and there's nothing in the Bible that says we have to do something a certain way, but there's a need for us to recognize that something has changed, that this is no longer the work week, but this is the rest time. And so there's been lots of different traditions, different ways that people have made that transition between the week and Sabbath. And I just want to ask you guys a few questions about that. By the way, John Brunt, you used to be at the Walla Walla University.
For a long time,
go ahead and use your mic.
Yes, I was there for a while.
Is it on? Make sure your mic is on. Let's see. There it is.
Okay. I was at Walla Walla for a long time.
Yeah.
From 71 to 2002, actually.
Okay. And you've been retired for a minute or two and had all kinds of roles, right? But one thing that John has done recently, this Festival of Sabbath weekend isn't brand new for us. They've done it back east a couple times, mm-hmm. and John's been part of a couple of these. And so we were grateful to have him come back to his old stomping grounds and share mm-hmm. this weekend with us. And tomorrow you're going to be sharing the message called mm-hmm. The Seventh Life mm-hmm. at church.
Right.
So we're glad to have you. Alberto Valenzuela is the Associate Director for Communication in the Pacific Union. He lives Thousand Oaks, California?
Thousand Oaks, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, and he's involved in this experience of the Festival of Sabbath, and so I decided to come and see what we are doing, and so I thought I'd ask you guys a few of these questions.
It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so what kinds of things have you done in the past I could ask both questions. What have you seen done to make that transition and to be effective in bringing that joy of rest and that change?
I became an Adventist when I was 17 years old. And for me, the notion of the Sabbath rest was something totally unique. It blew my mind away. And coming from a sort of Catholic tradition, we weren't used to preparing in advance, you know, on Friday to have everything ready. For us, it was a unique experience. And through the years, in my married life, and as I grew up as an adult, became better acquainted with what we as Adventists believed. It became something different, particularly when I noticed in other cultures how they related to the Sabbath, visiting places like India or Africa, where I was able to see our fellow Adventists also experiencing that. I remember a situation in Peru where I preached at a small church in the middle of nowhere. And then we were invited to lunch at the pastor's house, and they had a chicken prepared for lunch. And he says, "We're eating the tithe from one of our church members." That was the way they were contributing to, you know, that's what they had. They didn't have any money, but they had chickens. So they brought that to the church. I mean, just think about it. And excuse me, but I was thinking about your simile that you were using about how you start with darkness and then we turn into light and then we have another evening. And it occurred to me, I had never thought about this until just a few minutes ago, that that's the way your life and my life began. We were in darkness in the belly of our mothers. It was darkness, and then we came into light, and the first thing that we did was what? We cried. It was almost like, we're here. We wanted people to see that we had arrived. And it's kind of like the way that we celebrate Sabbath is kind of telling us, I'm here. Make me unique and special. I was reading, Zigbee was there a few minutes ago on the screen, and one of the things that he says is that it's Sabbath, of course, in tradition in different cultures, there's been 7 days, but it's only in the Bible that is mentioned that word, that term of Sabbath, in the way that we understand it as a rest.
No, you're good. You mentioned this idea about celebrating, and sometimes we get this idea. In Isaiah 58, he says, you guys, they put sackcloth and ashes, you know, clothe yourself in sackcloth and put ashes on your head and you lay down and you do this fast. And he's like, I don't really like that. And then he made the transition. The religious thing I want you to do is to loose the bonds of people, right? And so Sabbath, it's not intended to be a day of depression and somberness. It's intended to be a day of restful celebration. But I'm wondering, John, is there something that prevents us from celebrating and resting? Something that an obstacle that you've experienced in life that prevents that?
Well, I think sometimes it's because we think about rules instead of thinking about goals for Sabbath. And we'll talk about that a little bit in Sabbath school tomorrow morning, actually. I also think that sometimes the obstacles are that we don't plan for Sabbath. You know, it seems to me that you need to plan for a celebration. Special days we generally plan for. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do on a specific day in advance, but I know what I'm going to do on my wife's birthday, and I know what I'm going to do on our anniversary, because those are special days and I plan for them. And I think that we need to plan for Sabbath. One of the things we used to do when our kids were small is we had a whole list of things, and we went around the circle with four in the family and 4 weeks in a month, and each week, a different person got to choose what we were going to do for that Sabbath afternoon from the list of things that, you know, would be nice things to do on Sabbath. And so we were looking forward to it then all week. And I think that kind of planning and making sure that we're looking forward to a celebration instead of just saying, oh, no, it's here, what are we going to do?
Oh, it seems like if this is a day that God has given us as a gift, or a day of rest, that it should be a day that we really want to come. Right? And I like the idea of planning for celebration. But I have an interesting question for you, Alberto. Is there a period of time that our minds need in order to begin to experience rest and kind of transition into that rest? What does that look like?
I believe so. But building a bit on what Elder Brunt was saying, I remember... I was working in Southern Florida, and I was staying, a family was providing me lunch. We were working with an evangelistic crusade. And it was on Sabbath, what they were looking forward to, because that was the day, this is Florida, the Miami, South Miami area, Homestead, Florida. Sabbath was the day where they turned on the air conditioning. So they were looking forward to that. It's Sabbath, the time to turn on the air conditioning. And now going back to my days of college in Monte Morelos, we were also looking towards to Sabbath lunch, because that was the best meal that we had the entire week, lunch on Sabbath. Now, that helped us to prepare our minds. We're looking forward to something that was going to be meaningful, that was going to make us feel comfortable. You know, we're going to be not as hot, or we're going to be having a great meal. So that's something that we should be preparing for. Set our minds to, like, okay, what's going to happen this weekend? And in our family, we also had that as a tradition, that we prepared the best meals. Whatever our daughter wanted the best, or whatever my wife wanted, it was always going to be on the Sabbath, something to look forward to, other than the regular celebrations, like birthdays and anniversaries, or Christmas, or...
I read about one family who, on Friday night, to kind of mark the transition, their family would get together and they would make cookies, but you know, cookie dough, but not just like put cookies on a pan. They would fill the bottom of a pan with cookie dough, and they would cook it like a cake. Mm-hmm. And then when they'd get it out, they would put a quart of ice cream on the top of it. And they'd all just eat out of the pan together.
Just wait for the pan. Mm.
And they would tell stories. And they would talk about what they've done in the past to celebrate Sabbath and what they're looking forward to. And it seemed like, as they were talking about it, that all the best memories that they had were memories on Sabbath.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Good time of celebration. Oh, I was asking you, and we got off on the previous question, that I think was worthwhile, but is there a time that our bodies need to transition, our minds and our bodies need to transition? And how long do you think that takes in your experience, in your life, to be able to enter rest?
I'm one of those persons that is always on the go. I kind of find it hard to relax. I have to be doing something. Sometimes it's more than two or three things at the same time. And it can come to a point where I have to tell myself, you know, it's time for a cup of chamomile tea. And just put everything aside and just let your body, and not think even. Because even when I'm trying to rest, my mind is still going and thinking about what's going to be happening next. And it's I find out that a cup of chamomile with two little bags, and just let my body just flow. And sometimes, you know, it's early in the afternoon of Friday when I have to force myself to do that. You know, I did that just before I came here. What I did is kind of like, okay, I'm going to call my family in Baton Rouge, so that I'm not thinking about what I've been doing. I'm the editor of the Recorder, our union magazine. And in April, we do a special issue on education, and that's what I've been working all these days. So that's what I was doing yesterday and all day today, even as I was here. So I'm like, okay, enough of that. I need to just relax and just get my body and my mind in a separate mood. And I thought, well, I need to be in contact with my family. So that's what I did. Being in contact with somebody, kind of like what the video was saying, you know, kind of the community that you have in your family can help you also to be part of that rest that your body and your mind needs.
Yeah. What about you, John? How long does it take you to transition into rest?
Well, you know, it takes a little while. That's certainly true. I do like to start a bit before Sabbath. One thing that we did when our kids... pardon me, we're small. We found that it was hard to transition into Sabbath. There was so much to do, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, our wives were working. There were several families in our neighborhood that were Adventist. And wives were working, and you know, you come home and there's just, you got to get ready for Sabbath. And it was hard to get it done on time for sundown. So we decided that it would work better if we made each other accountable. And we got together as a group. And we met a half an hour before sundown. And we had the kids together. And we would just have a simple soup and and bread, meal, and we'd sing songs and then light a candle when Sabbath came. And we found out that since, you know, we knew we had to be accountable and had to be there a half an hour before sundown, it started actually getting us ready. And that helped a lot.
Yeah, that's interesting. Different cultures have done this Sabbath thing differently. If you're in Alaska and it's, you know, all day long, it's the sun is up, it never goes down, then some people, they just say, you know, 6 o'clock. Yeah. We'll call that the evening. And from 6 to 6, they observe a Sabbath, a day of rest. Other cultures have, you know, we're in a Western culture and we have the clock and we can look online and see when sunset is and all this kind of stuff. And so that half hour before the exact time, you know, it's today it was 5:43 or whatever the time was, right? I don't know if that was the exact case for today, but you know, we can put that on the time. But back in the day, the Jewish culture was that when you can see three stars,
that's right.
When you can see three stars, that's the time that Sabbath has begun. Of course, if you live in a big city, you might not ever see three stars. So that's a different problem. But, you know, whatever that time is, I think the invitation that God gives to us is to enter rest. That's an intentional thing, entering. And so if you don't mind hanging out with me, come over here.
Okay. And we're I would like to add a footnote to something you said earlier.
Good.
May I do that?
Go for it. I need your help. Come on over here. While I do this, you talk.
You talked about the health study of Adventists living 4 to 10 years longer. Gary Frazier, who's the head of that study, told a group of us something that is kind of scary, actually, for people like you.
Oh, for pastors.
And me. Yeah. He said that the strange thing they find is that every brand of Adventists, whether they're vegetarian Adventists or meat-eating Adventists, or Adventists who eat nuts, or Adventists who don't eat nuts, or, you know, whatever they are, different kinds of Adventists.
Adventists who are nuts.
They all live, yeah, they all live 4 to 10 years longer, except for one group, and that's pastors, who are right on the average life expectancy and seem to get no extra years. So
that suggests something about Sabbath, doesn't
it? It really does. It really does. And I would say to your congregation, you know, he's going to live 4 to 10 years less than you do if you don't make sure that he gets some rest and don't work him too hard all the time.
I think their problem is like Alberto. I have the same always going thing.
Yeah, I worked in Southern California, last century, you know, as a pastor for a few years. And the joke that we had among pastors was that we never kept the Sabbath. We saved it for Monday. Because Monday was our day off. But you know, being Sunday, I mean, Monday, it wasn't the same as keeping the Sabbath.
No, not the same.
No,
okay, so what are we going to do?
All right, well, okay. Joe Lieberman, who happens to be, or was, I don't know.
Was a senator.
Yeah, was a senator. He's retired now, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Joe Lieberman, senator, he's a Jewish background, and he wrote a book called The Gift of Rest, and he describes opening the Sabbath with his family and all these beautiful traditions, things that would mentally and physically change what's going on in the home. And he said that they loved Sabbath, they looked forward to it as a time of joy and something that they just really wanted, and they made good food and made sure that food was a big priority. Now, for generations, Jews have had traditions, none of which are required in God's word. There's nothing that commands anything like this, but there's something, you said the idea of preparing for celebration. You know, you prepare for something, but if that celebration happens every week, sometimes you need regular patterns to make that preparation reasonable. Otherwise, you're spending all your week trying to prepare for the special day, and that's not always practical, right? And so they would have regular traditions, things that they would transition into and out of the Sabbath with. And one of those is particularly valuable for today. What's today, Alberto? Women's?
Oh, the Day of the Women, International Women's Day.
International Women's Day. And one of the Jewish traditions is to read Proverbs 31, which talks about the virtuous woman. And how appropriate that we celebrate the women who give so much to make families work on a day when we invite them to rest. Now we can do lots of busyness on a Sabbath if we're not careful. But I think it's important that we do give rest on that day. And in this Proverbs 31, it's also kind of a invitation to see the Sabbath as a virtuous woman who provides all of these good things for us if we'll rest in what she, the Sabbath, provides. We're not going to read that tonight, but another thing that we will do is the candle. And the idea with the candle in the Jewish culture was that this is the presence of God, and they would keep that candle burning all throughout the 24-hour period and extinguish it at the end. Not that they're extinguishing the presence of God, but just a recognition that this is a special day where God has said, I'm going to be with my people. And so the lighting of the candle representing God's presence, and then they would also have the challah bread. And challah bread is like this celebration of all that God has provided. And so tonight, I've got some challah bread here. I think maybe enough. I can give everybody a little piece if you want to come up and share it with me. I'm gonna do this little ceremony with you guys. And why don't you come on forward and get a piece of bread? And then we're gonna sing a song to close called "Safely Through Another Week." But let's do this little ceremony, and I'll say a blessing. Would you, John, mind lighting this candle? Blessed are you, God, ruler of the universe, who sanctifies us and blesses us with this Sabbath rest. Yeah, come on forward and get up out of your seat. It's... nothing special about the stage here. Just pretend like you own it, like I do. Come on forward, and as you come forward, I'm going to say a blessing on this bread. Just come on forward, keep coming forward as I talk. We remember how God has provided for His people throughout all time. We remember the food that He gave when He planted the Garden of Eden, and we remember the food that He sent from heaven. When the Israelites were going through from Egypt to Canaan, and we remember the food that He's given us throughout this week. And so bless you, Lord our God, the creator and ruler of the universe. Bless you for providing our daily food and for giving us rest from our work and peace in our homes. Would you help? Oh, yeah, take a piece. Yeah. Here you go. There's another one, Alberto. Could you grab that? And we'll give everybody a piece. Do you know what challah bread is? It's a yummy sweet bread. Here we go. Like a piece. God has provided and He will provide again. There you go. You need more than that. It's a tearing bread, but this one doesn't want to tear. There you go. Grab some. Oh, you don't need to be that modest. Take a chunk. There you go. There you go.